Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right, welcome to the show, everyone. Today we're going to be interviewing one of our provider attorneys, Mr. Jacob Sapochnik out of San Diego, California. You know, Jacob, I've kind of looked up to you in many ways because he really has built an impressive practice that's been largely fueled by a very impressive social media following. He's got something like 170,000 fans on his Facebook page, you know, tons of followers on Twitter. He's doing live streams. He's the owner and operator of the Enchanting Lawyer podcast, where he interviews attorneys that are innovating in the industry. And, you know, he's really someone that's embraced technology, embraced the internet, and embraced these social media platforms to a degree that, you know, has really helped fueled his growth as an immigration lawyer in the San Diego area and then all throughout the United States as well. And the second of all, he's really embraced technology within his own practice. He's working with a company that's helping automate the systems and document preparation in his immigration practice, but also leverages, you know, case management tools and has a very large firm that is, I believe, 100% on the cloud. And this has allowed him to bring his costs down, streamline his practice, and also free up his time to focus on the things that are important to him most, whether it be growing his practice, other business ventures that he's involved in, and really lives a lifestyle that, you know, most people would really seek after. But at the same time, while doing so, has a very thriving immigration practice out of San Diego. So it's a really interesting conversation. We dive into all these tools, strategies for social media, and the things that he sees are the trends in the industry going forward that, you know, attorneys can really take advantage of if they want to be in a good position 3 to 5 years from now. So with that, let's get right into this conversation with Jacob Sapochnik, one of our provider attorneys out of San Diego, California. All right. Hey, Jacob, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave, for having me.
Pleasure. Yeah, really happy to have you on here. And we've been working together for some time, got to hang out at a couple of different conferences in the San Diego area and through Thrive. So it's great that we get a chance to catch up today and share a little bit more about the practice you've built in San Diego.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure.
Maybe what you could do is just give, you know, just a brief background on how you got your start in the practice of law, the focus of your practice, and the region that you serve, so folks have a little bit of context on where you're working from.
Yeah, sure. So I'm, you know, based in San Diego, California, and the practice is primarily immigration. So that's what we do. It's a niche firm where we do only one area. We are now a full service immigration law firm, which means we do both the business side of it and, you know, the family side and a little bit of litigation in immigration. And, you know, I'm originally from Israel, so I came to the United States to pursue my my LLM, which is the master's in law, and I plan was to stay here for a year. And then when I graduated, I really enjoy the way attorneys are practicing in the U.S., which is in a more open way, in a more of a kind of a business savvy, where you kind of become part of your client's adventure. You become more of a partner as opposed to just an advisor, in a sense that you really want to get into, you really care about what they do. And I feel that in Europe it was more of a, you know, I'm the attorney, here's what I tell you, and then that's it, you know. And so I really enjoyed that. And I was working for a law firm for a few years, and then I started my own firm in 2004, pretty much just by myself. And you know, back then, to advertise, we only had a few options. You had a website. Of course, Yellow Pages was strong. All the directories were very strong. You find law, lawyers.com, Martin and Hubble, they were pushing attorneys to advertise with them. And I think blogging just started. So, you know, we started our first legal blog in 2004. And then to me, that was like the early days of social media, where, you know, you have a blog and somebody can comment and you can respond. And to me, that was amazing that I can, you know, release a piece of content and somebody will comment and I'll be able to engage with them outside of legal consultations. And so, you know, blogging was good, and I continued to do that on a consistent basis. And through blogging, we really started to get our first media coverage, where we had newspapers and TV stations were calling us and said, "I read this article and so, can you tell me more about this?" And again, it was interesting to see that by just writing some stuff that was relevant. So, for example, changes in the law, you know, new citizenship changes, new you know, things that happened or controversial issues in immigration, and as you know, it's always in the news. By writing on it, about it, suddenly you get the attention of media, and the more you appear in the media, the more social proof you get, and that's kind of what I realized over the years. So blogging was good, and then everybody had blogs. Every attorney started to write, and it was more difficult to stand out. And so we started doing videos. 2009, we started doing videos, and I started doing consistent YouTube work, and we're getting a lot of the same thing. You do a video, and then somebody will start commenting, and you can engage with those people. Around that same time, right. I started playing with social media, Facebook mostly, where I was wondering why there were not too many attorneys on Facebook. And again, everybody was saying, "Oh, Facebook is just for kids. It's stupid. You know, just personal photo, vacation photos." And the more I was using it for to post information about what we do at the firm, kind of not the legal stuff, but more of the humane side, you know, birthday parties, just sharing quotes, the more a following we started to get. And you know, of course, I was using some ads here and there to promote the content, but the following really, really exploded around 2012, where we passed 50,000 fans, and that's when we really started feeling the impact, because we're getting a lot of inquiries from that page, and those inquiries turn into leads. And today we have about 130,000, you know, following on this page, and you know, when we do live video right now, and we can talk about it later, but live video is a tool you can use if you have a Facebook page, a business page, or a personal page where you can broadcast to your fans. And every time we do a live stream, we get about 400 to 500,000 reach on a page of 100,000 people, which is amazing. You can't even pay for that. Wow. So social media has definitely been an important tool for us to build our practice and continue to do today, because, again, you can continue to do your regular advertising, but you really want to be able to build a community of people that come back and engage on a daily basis, and that's really what social media has helped me. We continue to do that today, release free content, and fans like that we give them free information, and they reward us with shares and referrals and things like that. So that's kind of in a nutshell what I'm doing and continue to do.
Yeah, and for lawyers that maybe have not been in the space of, you know, writing blogs, being on video, you know, social media, and to them it's like you said, oh, you know, kids are on there and so forth. Maybe they haven't fully embraced the potential of social media. Obviously, you built a massive fan base, you know, 170,000 fans on Facebook, and you're getting a lot of traction on YouTube. What would be your, you know, given that you've had some experience doing this, how would an attorney that's, you know, looking to step into this arena start to think about how to, you know, develop a strategy and implement a strategy on social media, especially when you have lawyers that, you know, are so busy, you know, that their, you know, time is, you know, of the essence for them, where they can start building that following over time in a way that's going to be meaningful?
Well, I think that it is important to pay attention to this, because at some point it's going to be very difficult to stand out, right? So, you know, it's not going to be enough to pay for ads or you know, be on Yellow Pages or just do networking. And so I think it's important for lawyers to look at it this way. You know, we have to build ourselves as kind of like a mini brand. And how do you do that? Well, the way you do it is, I think the easiest thing to do is just by maybe short writing. So have a small blog. If there's no time to write, we started a podcast blog. We call this Ask an Immigration Lawyer, where I'll record a short audio, 5-minute audios about different questions that people ask, and I have somebody transcribe those into a written format, which is good for SEO. So this can be something simple anybody can do. Just create a blog, which is slash a podcast blog, where you can do either answer questions or have, the opinion of the week. You can do it once a week. Say my opinion on personal injury or my opinion on family law. And you know, if you do it consistently, then suddenly people will find and say, oh, this guy, he's the one that, you know. It can be as simple as that. And if you want to be elaborate, you can start building a community, kind of like a forum or a Facebook a page where you start gathering, following, which takes a little bit longer. But I think the simplest thing to do is just do a simple blog where if you don't have time to write, you just record audio once a week and have it transcribed. And then there you go. You have once a week you have content that you're going to publish on every Monday or Tuesday. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But it's simple. You know. But if you don't do that, then now you're not visible. Now if somebody searches for you, then they find nothing. And that's the worst thing that can happen, because if somebody's going to start Googling somebody and they want to be able to find what they have done and there's nothing out there, then it's a little bit concerning. Like, why aren't they, why isn't there anything out there on this particular professional, whether it's an attorney or whoever they are?
Yeah, so for you, it has really helped with people's confidence in utilizing your services because they have so much social proof, or they can Google and learn about you, and you've got so much content out there that really helps with your credibility.
Yeah, and they basically say, they always tell me, well, we see you everywhere. We see you on Facebook, we see you on YouTube, we see you on Google, we see you on LinkedIn, and so that basically tells them, well, if he's everywhere, then maybe he's pretty good. And so it helps also referrals, because somebody's searching for an attorney and they want to refer them to me, then we have a lot of people that find us through searchers. And that's been really, really helpful.
Can you give a little bit of context on, the impact this can really have? I mean, 170,000 fans, it seems like a huge number, but, how often are you getting calls, and how much has this been a factor in the growth of your practice over the past few years?
So, I have, there's a few articles that we released on this. And so I think that the difference between when you get a lead on your website, it comes to you from an ad, or maybe they found you in an organic search, is that when they come to you on social media and when they send that private message, and we get at least, I think we get at least 100 of them a day. Not all of them, of course, are case related. Some of them, they just people want to say a good word, or they, they want to let us know about something. But there's quite a few of them that are kind of like leads, where people say, I need help with this and this, and how much do you charge for this and this? And those people are people that follow you for weeks and months, and then they ask a question. So it's a little bit different than a direct lead that finds you online. Those are people that follow you, they gain your trust, and then they'll ask a question. I'll give you an example. We had an interesting a person that was commenting on all these inspirational posts, and she's a lady from Texas. And I think it was almost 2 months that she was commenting and saying nice words and stuff like that. And then one day she sent a private message, and she says, there's a member of my community in church that, they need help with this and this. And they are waiting at the border in Tijuana, they cross the border. So it's a five-person asylum case that she referred to us after 2 months of following us, and that turned out to be almost $45,000 worth of business for us, because these are five individuals that needed to do asylums because of that referral. And there was a very trusted referral, because they didn't even argue with us. They just wanted to hire us because she recommended them. Do you know what I mean? But
right.
It's the person that was lurking on the site for 2 months. Seeing what we do, and then she did a referral, which was, to me, it was very interesting, because this is the power of social media. This is what you see. It's not an immediate a result. It's something that takes over time, and more referrals like that are really, really good leads. And I have many, many stories like that to tell you that came from our Facebook page over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. And you hit on something I think really relevant there, which is that this is a referral from a trusted family friend or family member. And even if it wasn't, by the time someone reaches out to you on social media, as opposed to search marketing, which we do a lot of, where someone's just searching online generally for an attorney on a specific topic, they find a site and they may reach out to you. This, by the time they come through a social media channel or are referred, this is someone that you already have credibility with. They trust you. They know you're out there giving content. You've been giving value and great suggestions for sometimes years, depending on how long they've been on your list. And so by the time they're actually reaching out to connect or referring you to someone, they are already 90% of the way in your door as far as being ready to retain your services, because they already know your brand and they trust it and you know they feel comfortable with the idea of working with you at that point.
Exactly. So to me, this is more of like a referral source on steroids. To me, that's what social media is. So it's not going to replace the world of advertising, pay-per-click, but it's a nice addition to have. And of course, the more following you have, the more engagement you have, the more results you're going to get from that kind of efforts.
Right. Yeah.
But,
exactly.
But at the same time, you have to be willing to put yourself out there, meaning that you have to be visible. You have to be willing to do those live streams personally. I mean, those are sometimes some people feel uncomfortable to do that. But yeah, of course, you know, it definitely pays off if you're willing to do it.
Yeah, and you talked about earlier, like building your personal brand for your firm. And, you know, as a lawyer, your brand is you. I mean,
right.
You're the one that's providing the services, providing the practice. And so there is that, you know, maybe some attorneys have a little bit of inhibition about getting out there, but that's really the brand you're building is you as the attorney being able to deliver the service, how you speak, what you focus on. And so getting that out there, getting that message out there is really a key for people learning about your practice and getting comfortable with the idea of working with you.
Exactly.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because certainly within our company, and I think attorneys would think perhaps the same thing as well, when it comes to Facebook, for example, it seems like most people go on Facebook to connect with their friends and their family, right? Not necessarily to hear about, you know, a specific, you know, like changes in, you know, specific advice about a specific legal topic. So can you talk about the strategy, some of the strategies that you've developed for Facebook to keep it interesting, alive, something that people would want to connect to regularly, even folks maybe that don't even have a legal issue right now, but, you know, would find things that are interesting. Like you talk about, you know, you post inspirational quotes and make and customize the content you're putting out there for the Facebook audience.
Right. So I think the key, if you're going to use Facebook is definitely not to post legal content. So, you know, we'll post some news updates, but a lot of the content is really like quotes and inspirational stuff and then different interesting things around that. And maybe, you know, cause some of the live streams, I'll just open the door to people asking me any questions. So, I mean, a lot of the people who follow the page are not necessarily people in need of the legal services we offer. And I think it's good that it's like that, because those are the people that follow because they find it interesting that an attorney will post an inspirational quote on a daily basis and kind of be like a motivational lawyer, you know what I mean? That's a little bit of the strategy here, because we want to definitely keep it interesting, because the less interesting the content, the less people are going to want to follow. And then, or not only that, then even though if we have, let's say, 100,000 plus fans, if the content is not interesting, nobody's going to see it. And so it doesn't matter how many fans you have. If the content is not visible to all the fans you have, then nobody's going to see it. That's why the live streaming combination with interesting content, inspirational quotes, and videos has been very helpful for us to be able to reach as many fans as we can. It's always been a struggle. But, yeah, the strategy is not to post legal content. It's to find what the fans want and continue posting. And in my case, I realized that they want to see inspirational messages from me, an attorney in San Diego. That is kind of like the avatar of the customers that follow that page. They find it very interesting that an attorney somewhere in California is going to be posting these interesting inspirational quotes, and they want to know what's going to come every day. So that was that's what I discovered that the people who follow my page want. And I continue to do that, to continue to engage them, because that's what, you know, the more people see my content, the more benefit I get from the number of fans we have. But even if you have 5,000 fans, if at least half of them can see your content, that's perfect.
Yep. And one of the advantages of working in the immigration arena, obviously, is that you are in a position to potentially work with anywhere in the world as long as they're trying to, you know, gain rights to be a citizen or work or, you know, get residency in the United States. And so, you know, the fact that you can build a following nationwide in the immigration arena especially lends itself really well to being able to, you know, to work with virtually anyone that is seeking these types of services, is it not?
Exactly. For me, because it's a nationwide practice, it definitely helps to the fact that, if, you know, eventually if they want to hire me and they're in New York, they can still do it if they wanted to, definitely. But again, but if I was a state, if I was a state-based practice, then I would, but I would focus my efforts on that state in particular and make sure that I have as many fans as I can from that particular state or city, and that's another strategy. In my case, I didn't really care, and we really were wanted to be focused on anywhere in the country. You know what I mean? But it is possible to narrow yourself on one particular city or state if you really want to.
Yeah, especially when you're coming to promoting your posts using Facebook ads and these types of things, you can really target down where you are going to be engaging your spend on these social media platforms.
Correct, exactly. So I think for people who want to start doing this or are interested in this, you know, I believe that choosing one platform and trying to understand it and use it will be a good starting point, not do everything. So, you know, if somebody doesn't feel Facebook is good for them, then they can do maybe LinkedIn. You know, you can write articles on LinkedIn every day and repurpose the ones that you put on your blog, and then maybe do a small audio podcast just to be able to get more exposure on iTunes, and then repurpose the content by getting a transcription. You know what I mean? So there are many things you can do, but at least do something, do one thing. And don't feel overwhelmed because you have to do everything.
Yeah, and it really seems like everything goes back to the blog, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think for lawyers, definitely blog is the more comfortable, you know, a comfortable medium because everybody can write, and then they can, you know, they can choose the writing schedule, do it once a week or every other day, or whatever is comfortable for them. And again, you know, podcasting is like, you know, what we do right now. You know, if, you know, you can interview people in your field, in your area, in your niche area, people that want to, you want to be. Let's say if you're a family lawyer, you can interview psychiatrists or psychologists that could potentially refer clients to you going through counseling for divorce. You know what I mean? You become the known attorney in the field by interviewing them. An interview program has been very useful for professionals because now they're known to be the experts, and then people, even their guests, will start referring them people.
Right.
So there's just many strategies for that. It's just it's really about what are you willing to do and how often are you going to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So let's transition and talk a little bit more about kind of your immigration practice. One of the things that I've found very interesting and very exciting, especially from a technological standpoint, is the fact that immigration services, on the whole, are standardized across the United States.
Right.
You know, like one of the things about family law is, you know, every county, every state tends to have different procedures and different forms, but immigration is standardized across the nation. So can you talk about – and so what that does is it lends itself well to building a system that can therefore be, you know, automated and streamlined because a lot of the things are the same across the board where other areas have some of these challenges. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, the systems you've been developing maybe with Simple Citizen and ways in which you've been finding more creative ways and more efficient ways to work with your clients to bring down the cost or the margin, increase the margin, or lower the amount of time you need to invest into each individual immigration matter?
So, you know, from early on, we've been using case management systems, and I always encourage people to, no matter what practice area you are, to use. So we've been using, for example, software called MyCase, where we able to put all our cases and allow clients to log in. But in the recent year, I've developed a relationship with a company called Simple Citizen. I became an advisor on the board of this startup, and this startup developed the software allowing, like LegalZoom, allowing people to handle their own immigration matters that are form-based only. So they start with the family side of it, marriage cases and citizenship. And what the interesting thing about that software, has the algorithm to know based on an intake form that the client completes in the beginning how to produce the perfect forms and saving time for the person who is preparing them and make sure they're very accurate. At the same time, they're working on a software allowing attorneys to use that to process all their immigration applications as a virtual law firm. So essentially, it will replace all future case management software that we're currently using. Now, the reason I'm saying that is because the more software you are able to use in your practice, the less people you need, and the more efficient and accurate you become, because everything that happens to, you know, everything that you do several amount of times now becomes automatic. Like questions, same questions that you have to ask all the time in intake forms, clients that are able to log in and check their status without calling your office every day. And that's what we've been using right now with the startup. Perfecting the process, allowing us to work with individuals and with companies, making the immigration process pretty much very, very seamless and very efficient in the sense that they know exactly what's happening with their case, they're getting the results faster because we have a software that does most of the stuff. And then the attorneys are left to really work with the clients, make sure that their concerns are alleviated, and of course, leave them more time to deal with the more complicated issues when they arise. You know what I mean? And I think that's going to be the future. I mean, I was at a legal conference in June, and we were talking about the future of immigration law, which I think is going to be the future of law anyway. And in that conference, you know, where people from LegalZoom, the chief counsels over there and other companies, and the consensus was that attorneys that are not going to embrace technology to make their practice more efficient and save money for their clients are eventually going to disappear. Because, you know, as you know, you can form an LLC on LegalZoom without paying somebody $3,000 to do it. Now, some attorneys will say, well, the quality of the work is not the same and all that stuff. But most people who are going to use LegalZoom, it's good enough for them. And then they may go and see an attorney if there's a problem. So attorneys cannot continue to say these services are not good enough because the consumers don't care, right? They're still going to use LegalZoom, and they're not going to go and see that lawyer who says that it's too that it's not good. And so the smart attorneys are going to say, you know what, we understand that. Let's embrace technology. Let's also use online tools in our practices to say we also have online processes here, so you don't have to use LegalZoom. You can use us, you know, almost pay the same and still have the attorney help you if you really want to. Or use services like unbundled attorneys that are willing to review portion of the applications. So the point is that attorneys must evolve right now because technology is going to replace a lot of the things that we do as lawyers.
Yeah, absolutely. You have the emergence of the internet trend and technology bringing down the cost and streamlining some of the tasks that took so long. You're having to field all those calls in the past, having to manually data enter everything into forms, and that's now becoming automated. And certainly also you have the same shift in, at least in family law and in some other markets, where a lot less people are in a position to plop down $5,000 just to get started on a case.
Exactly.
And so, you know, that's the way the market's moving. In family law, we went from a third of people representing himself, you know, back in the early 2000s to now two-thirds of people representing themselves. So literally the market's flipped on its end. So, if you know, it seems like if you're going to attract the majority of the market – then you need to find a way to serve people at a price point and an accessibility level that is much lower than maybe 10 years ago.
Exactly, exactly. And there are many ways that you can do it. So you can start slow by using maybe a case management software, which is very simple, and then slowly add tools to that that allows you to manage your staff, allow them to access the software so everybody's kind of working together as a team online. Which is what we're doing in this office. You know, everything is kind of in the cloud. We have our emails connected to Microsoft 365. We have all our files in the cloud, PointShare. We have the MyCase software. We're using some Simple Citizen tools right now. So basically the idea is that people feel that at any time you know what's going on everybody's case and clients feel more confident that they get the best service because we have all the technology and the tools that they deserve because they're paying us.
Right.
So,
yeah, can you talk about maybe sharing a little bit more about the actual process that, you know, if when you're having a new client come in the office, some of the things that you're able to now, you know, have them do because of this technology and how that, you know, cuts down on some of the costs and allows you either to, like, you know, we've said before, build a bigger margin or offer, you know, a lower flat rate or lower price point that's going to be more attractive to the current market.
Right. So, for example, you know, every client that comes to the office, they have to fill a short intake form, right? That intake form is entered into our current MyCase system where we have all the information. So let's say if they want to start, a marriage case, we already have a bulk of the information from their initial intake. That was already it's already in the system. So it's already populated into the forms, and then there's less back and forth with the clients. Also, any documents that they we require from them in the initial request, they can scan and upload to the system or just email them to a secure email if they don't have an ability to upload. And so you only have to ask things once as opposed to before we have to go back and forth. Did you give us the birth certificate? Do you know what I mean? So those things
right.
really save a lot of time of communication between the paralegals and the clients because they only do it once. They know that they have to upload certain documents, otherwise they can't move forward in the file. And until they upload this, they cannot continue with providing more documents. So this way, it saves a lot of time. Did they give us the birth certificate or not? If they did, when did they give it to us? This way, in the beginning, we collect everything, and they know that they have to do it. And this way, the only thing that left to be done is just to deal with the missing information on the forms. And that's been really helpful for us to save time and effort between the paralegals that they have to copy and ask the client several times. The other thing is the follow-up. So clients usually call all the time to ask status on the case, and that takes a lot of time as well. But now that some of them are able to log in into their own cases, they can see what's happening live because there's a progress report in each portal. So they know that half of the forms have been completed, but the other ones have not been completed because they're missing documents. So they're just going to go and provide those documents and then call to figure out what's going on. That's been also a time saver for us because they don't have to call and say, what's going on with my case? Because they can see it by logging in to the portal. So things like that, and we continue to improve that. Some of these business cases, there are certain steps that they have to follow. Whether the employer is waiting on documents or the employee is waiting on documents, they can get updates automatically through the emails every time something happens, a step or an action. Again, those things are continue to be improved as we get feedback from our clients and we get feedback from the staff to make sure that things are just more and more efficient. I think the fact that we are able to put everything on the cloud has also been very useful because we can find things much faster right now. We don't have to go to a physical file. We can just search for it in the system and find documents. That's been really a time saver. And email them directly from the system to people without going to scan it and copy it and send it. So things like that definitely have been saving a lot of time and effort. And of course, the systems at the office, everything has a system. How do you do this? How do you file this case? How do you answer the phone? How do you update the clients? We're trying to continue to improve our systems all the time. And everybody at the office kind of understands that. You've been to the office. You've seen how the team works. Kind of, we have a very bonded team. Everybody knows that they have to kind of support each other. They do it because they care, not because they're forced to do it. And I'm trying to kind of install that kind of philosophy. If we care about our employees, they should be caring about their clients. So we try to care about the employees first, and then they'll care about the clients, as opposed to, being not nice to the people who work for us, and then expect them to be nice to the clients. It's never going to work.
Right. Yeah, it has to be kind of like a top-down philosophy then blends
nice,
itself into the way they treat their clients.
Right, making sure that we accommodate them if they need to be days off or everybody gets rewarded for what they do. And then I know by doing that, they'll definitely be nice to the clients because they feel appreciated by me and the other management at the office.
Yeah. I think underlying all this is a different way to think about the practice of law, more as the entrepreneur and as a business owner building a business system, as opposed to someone that's self-employed that has to be the one to do every task in the process. I mean, so many attorneys that are smaller firms or sole practitioners, they have their hands on the wheel for every single task because they feel like if it's going to get done, it needs to get done themselves. Whereas this type of systems really lends itself well to scaling a business, to be able to reach out to a lot of people, and also, of course, bring the cost down to be able to reach into the marketplace that that people are needing. Certainly we have a lot of lawyers in the family law arena providing unbundled legal services. And when they start thinking in this way, it's incredible how the implementation of these technologies and thinking about systems and standing operating procedures can really start to streamline the process so that every single system becomes more efficient, takes less time, and either can increase those margins so your lawyers become a lot more profitable, or can bring the cost down so they're more attractive in the market and they can differentiate themselves.
I agree. I mean, I think it's a law firm at the end of the day is a business, and even if you think you can do your work and it's going to be a 10, if somebody else can do it as an 8, I don't think anybody's going to be concerned about that, as long as it's done almost as perfect as needed.
Well, right, and you can create systems to ensure. I mean, what we're talking about here is tasks being done, whereas as an attorney and as you're working with your firm, you're overseeing the actual what needs to be done and how it needs to be done. But as far as the implementation, a lot of these things are just duplicatable tasks that you can start to automate or streamline so they're not having to be repeated like you discussed before. So, I mean, do you really feel you know, I think that's probably an argument for a lot of people is, well, when you start streamlining these things, the quality of the service goes down, when I really don't seem like – it doesn't seem like that's really actually the case. It's really just automating the things that are more, you know, monotonous or repetitive, is it not?
Right, right. Exactly. Exactly. I agree. And I think that, you know, it's going to become almost a necessity to do it, because otherwise you can't, you know, it feels like a race in a way. You can't get ahead unless you have a system that is working.
Yep. Yeah. And you talked about it earlier, you know, even with just blogging, you were blogging, but then everyone started doing content. So then you need to be one step ahead. Then you evolved to doing videos on YouTube and starting commenting on there. And then, you know, people started getting on YouTube. Maybe the traction wasn't there. And so you started live streaming. And so
yes,
being on the cutting edge and going to these conferences is really what kind of can keep you up to speed on where you need to be and thinking forward to where these trends are going so that you can be in a position to be well positioned and be first in the market and to capitalize on them as well.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, of course, that's a good idea as well for people to try to see what others are doing, not necessarily in the legal field, and they get some ideas, like, you know, going to these conferences or just learning or, you know, looking at what's happening in social media or in business and trying to apply what will be good for you, for your business, and just try it. You know, if it doesn't work, you know, you can always try something different. But whatever you do, try to do something that is different than your competitors, because otherwise you're just going to, like, you know, you're running against yourself.
Right. Yep. And then the final thing I wanted to ask you about, and then we can wrap it up. I really appreciate you jumping on and sharing kind of how you've built the empire down in San Diego. And is, you know, I did get a chance to meet your guy, come into your firm, meet a lot of the attorneys. But when you first started out, you were a solo practitioner.
Correct.
You're doing all the work yourself. And obviously you've built this firm over time. Can you talk a little bit about how you made that transition from being a solo practitioner to bringing on your first, you know, associate attorneys and some of the things that you've developed over time? You know, of course, the technology and cloud-based and these types of things are really relevant, but more generally speaking, how you were able to evolve the firm and what are the things that really made the difference for you in those early stages?
So, you know, I think early on, I have decided that I wanted to not be a solo and have people that will assist and continue to grow the business. So I believe that I was able to actually hire the first attorney to work at the office even before I was really able to fully pay them. And what I mean by that is that, you know, sometimes people feel that when they have enough cash coming in, they can start hiring. For me, it was more of a, once I'm able to at least pay something for somebody to help, I'm able to free myself to be able to bring more business. And this is really what I did, because I felt, you know, kind of like a freedom to think and engage with clients while somebody else is actually producing the work. And that was kind of like a shift when I was able to do it, because when I did that, you know, within months, I was able to pay them what I was supposed to pay them and still pay myself. And then I was able to bring another person on because I did have the time to think and free myself to do the activities that I'm good at, which is marketing and building the business. And so I think that moment where you are hiring somebody before you can pay them is really important, because you need to do it at that point and not when you are actually able to afford, because at that point you say, well, you know, I'll wait a little bit more, and then it doesn't happen. You kind of sink into a cushion where you just continue to be a solo. The transition happens the moment where you can't really afford, but you're doing it because you know you can do some other things that are more beneficial for your business. And I think that is really the key, and it continues to happen even today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really easy to look at each task and go, well, I could be performing this and making X number of dollars per hour, whereas if someone else does it, I'm only making X minus a certain amount. But it's important to remember that once you get these other tasks off your plate, that frees up your time to then do the things that you are your fastball, are your skill set that can then grow the firm even further. You know, and then there's that gained opportunity to grow the firm that comes out of the fact that you don't have to be focusing on, you know, other specific tasks, that I think is really where the opportunity lies as far as, you know, growing a firm and also growing the overall profitability of the business, is when you start thinking about how you can be focusing your things on really the things that move the needle in the business and not necessarily the tasks, you know, day to day that Maybe you might make a little more money if you did it yourself, but ultimately you're not, you know, building the business to a point where you can scale and serve more clients as a result.
Exactly. So I think that's kind of really the premise behind what I've done and continue to do today, is the fact that, you know, you decide that you want to become a firm because you do one thing good and somebody else can do other things, and together you do it better as a team.
Yeah, and you know, it seems like you've gotten to a point, Jake. I mean, we were at conferences quite a bit. You know, you're traveling quite a lot, and you know, the firm seems to continue to operate. So it's pretty amazing where you can get to a point, because you know, obviously you're working in your firm very diligently, but you also have the freedom to be able to have lifestyle and focus on other projects that are important to you as well, it seems like, right?
Exactly. That's the whole point, because then you know that now you can go and it will continue to work, and you can either, you know, focus on being away to vacation or to market or to build some other businesses that will help the firm too. And as you know, I started a coffee shop and a co-working space in the last 2 years. That was as a result of my ability to do this.
Yeah, and you got the podcast, Enchanting Lawyer Podcast, as well.
Right.
And so, you know, these are all businesses and other opportunities. You know, the co-working space and things that you're interested in that, you know, if you were there, you know, pound the pavement in your firm, it just would never become possible.
Absolutely, because you know that how time is valuable for everybody.
Yeah, and then of course, you know, building Simple Citizen and automating your business. I mean, you can really look at it from a CEO, COO operations standpoint, where you can start automating the business system and look at it from someone that's outside of the procedures and not somebody that's stuck in the day-to-day minutiae. So it just seems like it really lends itself well to building something that can be, you know, taking things to the next level overall.
Exactly. And we'll continue to, like I said, look for new ideas and innovation to either, you know, build the businesses and also improve the quality of the work and, of course, our relationship with our clients.
Yep. Absolutely.
Perfect.
Well, listen, Jacob, I really thank you again for, you know, coming on board and sharing so openly the strategies you develop for social media, automation, technology. These are certainly things that the legal system, I wouldn't say is, you know, a little bit behind on, but, you know, attorneys, like you said, if you really want to be, you know, a force in the coming, you know, 3, 4, 5, 10 years, these are the trends that are really necessary for them, for your attorneys to be embracing.
Yeah.
And so I really thank you for kind of setting that as a vision, as an intention, and inspiring other lawyers to do the same, so they can be, you know, part of, you know, serving the folks that, you know, are going to be a part of this new generation in the coming years.
Thanks, Dave, for having me. It was a true pleasure. Absolutely.
All right. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up. And to everyone else that's been listening to the podcast, we thank you for participating, and we will see you all in the next episode. Thanks so much.
For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available, and leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.